Back together again, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, the 28th of May, 2026, right here on Connecticut Today. I open up the show with word that state officials have announced five construction zones will see work zone speed enforcement cameras up and running in the coming days. Landmark Legal Foundation VP and legal analyst Mike O'Neill dropped by. He had joined us to break down some sizable news from the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes, yes, yes. It's another day of the best of speed cameras right here. Got to tell you right here, WICC 600 AM, 95.9 FM, and of course, online, voiceofct.com. It's been in the news the last couple of days. We've talked about it here. It's been in John and Chris's news. Some consternation, some support for local speed cameras getting up and underway, either in a testing phase or in a few weeks, municipalities going to a real ticketing phase where you'll stop getting the warnings and get tickets. But you're going to find this on the highways, too. Now, a couple of weeks ago, remember I told you that the DOT and the state, and probably at the urging of the governor, although we don't know if that's true or not, they were going to do plain old speed cameras on certain stretches of I-91, I-95, I-84, where, and you know, we've talked about this over and over and over and over and over again, people drive, like me, exceedingly fast. Yes, I'll be the first here to admit that I'm not always a saint behind the wheel, but having said all that, earlier, though, a few weeks ago, it was very quietly done, although it did get some mention in the media and here on this show that the DOT decided in the end not to have regular speed camera enforcement on 95, 91, Route 8. I think they were going to do something on Route 8. They were going to do something around Norwalk, right around 17, 16, 15, 14 there, up and down on 95, to and through Norwalk. So that got yanked, probably because they looked at each other and said, well, wait a minute, just about everybody is speeding. And we're not talking about just doing 70 or 75. You got people doing 75, 80, whatever. So they being the powers that be, pretty much said, well, forget it, never mind. But, the speed cameras are coming next week to certain work zones in Connecticut. Now, again, this is a test phase of speed cameras on work zone or in stretches of work zones. Because if you're like me and you drive back and forth 30, 40, 50 miles a day, maybe, you see people, even though the orange signs are up there, work zone ahead, speed zone ahead, slow down. And even if they have these roaming trucks out there now with your digital speed as you blow past it, people don't care. So get this, and I'm using this version over WTNH News 8's website here. And again, this is going to be our question of the day now. Now, I don't really understand how somebody can say no to speed cameras in work zones where we have guys and gals out there just a few feet from traffic, and why people, A, can't find the goodness to slow down. I'm not talking about crawling through there, because they don't want you to crawl, because that'll create a hazardous scenario as it is. But at least drop it to whatever the speed limit says there, 45 or 50. And again, they're telling you where some of these speed zone cameras are going to be in work zones. Speed cameras, says here, are set to be activated in Connecticut highway work zones starting on June 1. That's next Monday, if I can read my calendar properly. June 1. That's according to the DOT. Now, where are they, you'll say, Paul? Well, I'll give you the list right now. And if you want to, you can easily avoid them. Or maybe you can just slow down. And again, we're talking about the brake pedal here, the pedal second from the right. It could be second from the left if you have a clutch, but let's not go into that. The automated speed cameras, and these cameras are mounted on vans or on SUVs, and I think it says DOT speed enforcement. I remember when they were out there the first time. The automated speed cameras are located in highway work zones, ready? In East Lyme, Colchester, Glastonbury, West Haven, and Bolton. So if you're listening to my dulcet tones, thank you very much, and you're in Fairfield County here, or even in New Haven County, the closest one you're going to see, and there's a whole boatload of construction that's been going on for a couple of years in West Haven, right around exit 43, I think, where they're building in some new on and off ramps here. It's a big, big, big job. So you're going to have speed zone cameras in work zones in West Haven, Glastonbury, the town of Bolton, the town of Colchester, and the town of East Lyme. So right now they are in the month of June, only warnings are going to be issued for the first few days of June and all the way to the month. But then starting on July the 6th, the state's going to issue citations and fines. You're being told. I have no sympathy for you if you get caught here. I don't. So right now in the merry month, no, that's May, in the month of June coming up that starts on Monday, and for the entire month of June, in five spots in Connecticut, if you don't slow down to what the signs say in these construction spots, the closest one being in West Haven, you're going to get a warning. And then starting, after the 4th of July weekend, on June 6th, the state's going to issue citations and fines. First offense, you get a written warning with no fine. Second offense, drivers will get a notice of liability. I like that. Boy, George Carlin would love that, huh? We don't get tickets anymore. We have notices of liability. A $75 fine. If a vehicle travels 85 miles an hour or greater in a highway work zone, drivers will get a $75 fine regardless of whether it's a first or subsequent offense. Now, you can't be against this, can you? Okay, you can say, well, it's my town with a cash grab, or it's my city with a cash grab, or it's the city next to me with a cash grab. If we're talking about these municipal cameras, and there's been a lot of chatter about that over the past few days, in particular, pertinent to this radio station in Fairfield and also in Milford. And city and town politics being what it is, you can say, well, okay, you know, I don't like the police chief, I don't like the mayor, whatever, I can complain about that. But having said that, highway work zone, are you going to complain about speed cameras being in highway work zones? And by the way, you notice that even if you get to 85 miles an hour, which you got to be a real chooch to be doing in a freaking work zone, the fine here only tops out at $75. So you tell me, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Connecticut will activate speed cameras in more highway work zones, not in your cities and towns. Highway work zones this coming Monday, June the 1st or June the 1st. Do you approve? Tell me, sir or lady, why or why not? And, you know, I see it almost every day back and forth from my CASA to connoisseurs facilities here in Milford. People, and they get the warnings, you know, the orange signs are up there, right lane closed ahead, left lane closed ahead, shoulder closed ahead, mowing ahead. It's a big mowing time now because the weather's turning warm, so you have those DOT crews out there doing the first mowing of the shoulder and of the medians here. And, you know, you occasionally see construction zone speed limit 50 or something like that. And yet, I move out of the way. I don't want to be anywhere near the construction zone. You never know what might happen. So I get as far away as I can. Yay me. And, but I look, and here comes a guy on the right and a gal on the left and a truck behind me, and they just don't want to slow down. Even though if they just tap the brakes and slow down, you'd be through that construction zone in 5 or 6 seconds. Maybe 10 seconds if it's lengthy. And a lot of times there'll be a state police trooper there in an SUV, you know, the gray SUVs with the state police lit up on the back. And a lot of people don't give a crap either. They like, hey, come and get me, copper. Nah, come and get me. So, yeah, I like this idea. I do. Do you? 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Starting on June 1 in a first wave, and they did this a few years ago, testing this. And they found that, yeah, people, they did it recently up in Meriden, too, at that big rebuild of 691 and 66 and I-91 and Route 15 up there, where it's the Wilbur Cross Parkway and not the Merritt, but, you know, people call it for what it is. And they had, I mean, with plenty of signage up there, there's orange all over the place, and you had people, excuse my French, just barrel-assing through there. So, I look, every construction zone of some import there should have one of these vans. And I'm wondering, though, if you see this as Big Brother-ish, as intrusive, as unfair, as snoopish, people, you know, looking around and doing what they're doing there and doing it with the, you know, traffic cameras there instead of a state police trooper or three, which is supremely impossible. Now, you could say this. You could line up two or three state police cruisers, right, or 4x4s, the SUVs, and have those lights ablazing, the flashing lights, the blue and orange lights. Would that make people slow down? Yeah, maybe. But you know what? Knowing what human beings do, they're liable to just fly through there once they're on the other side of those state police SUVs, and they won't think twice about it again until they see another SUV because they didn't get hit for $75 or $80 or $85 or $95 or whatever it is. So that's why the fines are good. And, you know, they're less than six figures. They won't break the bank. Less than six figures. Although some people I see, they're less than three figures. And they probably won't break the bank. But it's a nice little tidy reminder there. Now, I'm wondering, in light of what we discussed over the past few days with a lot of people liking the license plate scanners, a lot of people not liking the license plate scanners, a lot of people liking those municipal speed cameras, a lot of people saying, no, that's too Big Brother-ish for me, even though I'm a law and order guy or gal. How do you feel about work zone cameras? Are you even against them in work zones? Supposing your husband or wife or niece or nephew or son or daughter was one of the guys and gals in all these construction zones with the orange vests and the hard hat there all times of the day or night. Wouldn't you want to just smack somebody around monetarily? It is. We're not doing this in real violence, which is the best kind. But wouldn't you want somebody to get ticketed if they go flying through that work zone where your son or daughter is working, your mom or dad, your grandson or granddaughter, your niece, your nephew? I would hope so. I'm not trying to make a judgment value on you, but you know what I'm saying here. So what do you think? Connecticut will activate speed cameras in more highway work zones. That starts this coming Monday. Now, they're not going to do the speed cameras on the highways, at least for now, outside the work zones. They were going to do that. It got yanked from a bill a couple of weeks ago, probably on the assumption that you'd have to be machine gunning those tickets out there so fast. And maybe they figured, well, we can't handle the volume of appeals and all this. We'll try it again, and we'll gradually tell people it's coming up. But work zones, you okay with this? Or are you also against these mobile speed cameras even in a construction zone? Some interesting things happened concerning the U.S. Supreme Court today. A conviction of such was set aside because of a racial reason. Other stuff, too. These aren't landmark gangbuster cases, but wanted to check in with our buddy. He's one of the VPs of law at the Landmark Legal Foundation. Mike O'Neill is with us. Mike, good afternoon, as always. How are you?
I'm well, Paul. Good to be with you.
Thank you, Mike. So what happened today? Let's talk about this one case. Let's start with this regarding a case where I guess the high court says, yes, there was some racial bias here in what, a murder case? Fill us in.
Yeah, I think you're talking about the Pitchford versus Kane. This is involving Batson challenges and preemptory challenges at trial. And so what was required is, in as you probably know, as you've seen in trials on television and everything, that the attorneys for each side, the prosecution and the defense, are entitled to a number of preemptory challenges when they're doing jury selection, voir dire. Mm-hmm. And they can challenge them and they can say, okay, we're gonna cancel, strike juror 3, 5, 7 for, and they don't have to express a reason. However, there's a case, they are not allowed to do this. Prosecutors and defense aren't allowed to discriminate on the basis of race. So a prosecutor can't simply strike jurors for the sole purpose of on the basis of their race. There's a case in 1985, Batson versus Kentucky, that prohibits that. It violates the Equal Protection Clause.
Yeah.
So you can't simply say that juror 3, I'm going to strike you, and you have to express a reason beyond race. You have to be able to do that. And there was some questions here in this case, Pitchford versus Kane, which involved, I think, a pretty severe conviction. Two black teenagers robbed a grocery store and shot and killed, and one of them shot and killed the white owner. So we're talking about serious convictions here. And the trial court didn't follow all the requirements for when a Batson challenge is raised by a defense attorney. They can raise that challenge. They can say, hey, we believe that the prosecution struck these jurors on the basis of race. The prosecution's entitled to defend their decision, and that is a rebuttable presumption, and the defense is entitled to come back at them. And the trial court has to make sure that they follow these specific procedures when a Batson challenge is raised in order to ensure that the Equal Protection Clause is preserved and the rights of the accused are preserved properly. And the court, in a 5-4 decision, said, "Hey, yeah, we're going to hold you to that, trial courts. And if you're going to fail to follow these procedures, we're going to remand it back. And we're going to, even despite the fact that I think the appellate court had affirmed the trial court's opinion and decision. And I think the Supreme Court really reiterated that they're going to hold these trial court judges' feet to the fire when it comes to Batson challenges. And they're going to say, hey, look, we're protecting the rights of the accused in these cases. And unless you follow these procedures and allow the defense the opportunity to rebut this, it's not going to pass constitutional muster. And so this 5-4 decision, you saw that. So preservation of the Batson decision, really important to ensure that these preemptory challenges and that the rights of the accused are preserved, and the court affirmed that in a 5-4 decision.
Yeah, you don't see too many 5-4s from this court or any other court, Mike. And I guess what, Brett Kavanaugh wrote the majority opinion in this? Is that right?
Yeah, and that's on par with him. He's demonstrated in the past that he's going to be very serious about, he's going to take these Batson challenges seriously. It's kind of one of, the justices we've seen in the past have their own little kind of issues, and as their tenure elongates on the court, you can see that, Neil Gorsuch is going to probably handle a Native American case.
Yeah.
When it's a Batson decision, that's kind of the forte of Justice Kavanaugh, and you're going to see him weigh in accordingly.
Interesting. And finally, I see where the high court may step in here as far as the war powers resolution. What's up with that?
Oh, was there something? I didn't see that. Can you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, that's right. There are a couple other criminal cases that came down, decisions that came involved. What was the war power? If you give me a quick section.
I'm sorry. The Supreme Court may upend Congress's power over the Trump-Iran war. Several Republicans defending the president's military actions in Iran say he has broad constitutional authority to conduct overseas operations And they want this. They want the whole debate over the War Powers Resolution.
Well, that would be great.
To land before the Supreme
Interesting.
Court. Yeah.
I think that would be a really interesting thing. You're talking about debating the constitutionality of the War Powers Act. And that's actually, that would be a really welcome debate that I think would be proper for the Supreme Court to get a handle on. The extent to which Congress can, the interaction here, we're talking about the Congress's power to declare war and then the president's power as commander in chief. So you're going to see some, there's obviously tension between those two delegated powers in our in our Constitution, excuse me. And so the War Powers Act, the question is, of course, is whether the War Powers Act intrudes on the presidential's prerogative as commander-in-chief and to conduct. And we know when he's operating in an international capacity, he's operating at the height of his executive powers. But again, of course, you have the power to declare war. So you have these contrasting powers within our Constitution that are in tension. And I think if there is an actual federal challenge to that, that migrates up to the Supreme Court, that would be a very, very important case that I think would be really interesting to take on. So thank you for broaching that. That's a really important subject to talk about.
Yeah, and you said you had one more that you wanted to mention here. Anything else rumbling there?
Yeah, there were just a couple of cases involved from the Supreme Court involving criminal procedures. There was some application. There's a creative application of the Compassionate Release Act. I think, as you saw, unfortunately, depending on your perspective, Justice Jackson was in a lone dissent. This is a case that the court reiterated, look, if you're going to challenge an unlawful detention, in other words, if you're imprisoned and you want to challenge the lawfulness of your imprisonment, you have to do it through what is known as a habeas corpus petition.
Sure.
And criminal defense attorneys creatively were trying to apply a different statute, which is the Compassionate Release Act. And Justice Jackson was the lone dissenting, saying, look, I think that we can apply the Compassionate Release Act for people who are alleging that they've been unlawfully detained. No, 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 said eight of the justices. The proper avenue for doing that is through your habeas corpus petition. So Justice Jackson is out there again, kind of on her lone island with some of this stuff. And you can interpret that however manner you want to talk about. But I think that was getting a little bit of play here in the Supreme Court circles today. So Justice Jackson out there again on her own with kind of a creative interpretation of a particular statute where even Justices Sotomayor and Kagan were jumping on board.
What?
So interesting stuff as usual, right, Paul?
Yeah, Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation. Mike, as always, love your input here. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure. Have a great afternoon.
Take care. Yeah, why not debate the War Powers Act, right? How about that?